once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last five, 6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, live here on this Thursday, December 4th. Good to be here. Good to have you alongside us live at Fashion Furniture for another edition of our show. 2 hours today before we send it up to Detroit for the Lions and the Cowboys Thursday night football coming up on 1430. Reminder, here at Fashion Furniture, it's the Black Friday clearance event that continues. It's been extended past Black Friday. Fashion has hundreds of items of up to 70% plus 100 dining room sets discounted for immediate delivery. Sleep Retreat inside Fashion Furniture has closeout mattresses at 50% off and foundations at 50% off. Adjustable bases starting at $299 and free if you buy a Beauty Rest Black mattress plus up to 24 months free financing. Come by Fashion Furniture here today. Nothing like it in all of California. We also got Me and Ed's Pizza, courtesy of Me and Ed's. Appreciative of them. We got some good eats over here on the right side to us on our desk here. And excited to be chatting about sports. If you want to come by, stop by, have a little bite to eat, and listen to some sports talk, we're here for you. If you want to get in on the conversation, of course, 559-320-1430, the way to reach our show, 559-320-1430, way to reach our show via the Lee's Air Hotline. That is the way to reach our show, Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing, the way to reach our show, sponsoring our hotline today. They also sponsor the Weather Check, which is currently cloudy and 53 degrees outside as we speak. High of temperature today of 53, getting down to the 40s by the evening side. Get up to 56 tomorrow, 59 on Saturday, and then we'll touch the 60s. But once again, mild temperature here in the month of December, as you know, here in California. All right. Good show ahead for us today. Can't wait to get into it. We got our Student Athlete of the Week interview, which we got a chance to talk from Emmanuel Football. Tyler Romo, our Student Athlete of the Week for us here. And I visited with him and head coach Josh Henderson. We talked to them, and we'll have that interview coming up in about 10-15 minutes or so. We'll also get into some other topics, including the Bonatti Blitz, which we're going to do today because tomorrow is going to be just a 40-minute show. Not enough time to do the Bonatti Blitz, so we will pick the games of the NFL Week 14 today, and then we'll preview Lions-Cowboys ahead of it here on 1430. Producing in the show over on the other side, Jorge is over there. Jorge, how are you doing on this this Thursday afternoon?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Fantastic. We're just chilling out here, of course. Good to have you here. So appreciative. By the way, I have a funny question to you, but I'm gonna save it for as I introduce the other two guys who are here. Tanvir, Daniel here as well. Just hanging out today for the show. Guys, appreciate you stopping by. How are you doing on this Thursday?
Yeah, doing good. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah?
Doing great.
Doing good as well.
Yeah, great. So, Jorge, I had a rant yesterday about a movie I watched, and Jorge watched it for science last night for me. And Jorge, what was your opinion of the movie Flight Risk last night? I watched it 2 nights ago, as I said on the show, gave my very honest review, and it piqued your curiosity. And Jorge, what was your thought of Flight Risk?
Oh, it was horrible. It was unnecessarily just one of those movies that the dialogue is bad, the acting is weird, and I don't know, bad. Even the science behind like things like flying is like, wow, like that's not even that's
the
not
science
how it's
behind the flying. Yeah, no, like, it was illogical.
Physics were not a thing in this movie called Flight Risk. Yeah,
it looks awesome. and then it's not. It just quite simply does not work as a movie.
It was a $25 million movie, which is considered low budget.
Yeah.
But and, the low budget was, I guess, spent on
I think all the budget was spent on shaving Mark Wahlberg's head into like a cul-de-sac for a bald head to make him look evil. But anyways, fascinating stuff. I just needed you to speak the truth to the world here about that movie. And I'm glad you got a chance to witness it. Guys, have we piqued your interest in a trash thriller like Flight Risk?
I mean, looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score, that is quite low. But you know what? Sometimes when it is that low, it piques your interest even more.
So 90 minutes of you'll never get back.
Yeah. Do I want to waste 90 minutes tomorrow or today? Probably.
I don't know how you look at the movie poster and think, I want to watch this.
That's Mark Wahlberg, man.
It looks so low quality.
It looks like Dunkirk. Like you're gonna be
amazed at how horrible the quality of the movie is. Like, you think it's bad, and then suddenly you're like, oh, there's a love plot that's like making no sense here for a movie about three people in an airplane, and one of them's trying to kill the other.
There's two other subplots in this movie that make zero sense. Zero sense, and all of a sudden, like, the ending of it does not make any justice to any plot at all.
No, it does not. Anyways, all right, we don't talk about movies here at the top of the show. I just wanted to just get that opinion out of the way for Jorge so he can move on with the rest of the show, and I want to get to some topics here, and I think a relevant topic is college basketball, which, of course, Fresno State, I know, is traveling to Arkansas today to get set for their game on Saturday against the Razorbacks, a prime opportunity for this Bulldog team to, cause some trouble a little bit for this Arkansas team. But let's be honest with ourselves. After I was interviewing Jake Heidreder yesterday, and during the segment I had Arkansas basketball on. Kind of wish I asked him about it. I forgot to. As I was sitting there watching that game progress, seeing Arkansas go, I would say almost 20-plus, I think, in the first half, up on Louisville, number 6 Louisville, undefeated Louisville. I became the Ralphie Simpsons gif where he says, he chuckles, I'm in danger, that I use a lot. And I feel worried about what could happen on Saturday. But you could have historic highs with the way these teams win, and then suddenly you get a letdown post after it as well. But I thought it was a very relevant game to Fresno State last night, if anybody got a chance to watch it. Tim, here, I know you're an Arkansas fan through and through, so
yep.
I'm sure you were monitoring the game closely. You have a little scouting report from last night's game over Louisville?
Yeah, new freshmen being game changers for this Arkansas team is something that you regularly see over the last couple of years. But I feel like Darius Acuff, the point guard for Arkansas, he was in the top 5, I believe, in the rankings for freshmen coming in. And he's made a great impact. He's one of the few point guards or players in NCAA history that had 15-10-5 against the top 6 opponent ever. And this guy is playing at an amazing level. They're shooting threes really well. They have a pretty good bench as well. In terms of the way to battle this team and beat them, I think it's going to have to be through the three-pointers and getting to the free throw line. So Fresno State, they have a challenge on their hands, and there's going to be a lot of good guards that they're going to have to go up against. But I think they can be up to the challenge.
What can you say? Because I'm looking at the volume of shooting from Louisville.
Yeah.
Louisville shot 37 threes last night, only got 8 of them fall. But if you're a team like Fresno State that has an ability to shoot a volume 3-point total, that tells me that Arkansas is willing to let you have those shots, just really be able to dominate inside and interior-wise. If Fresno State can get hot, like let's say a half like we saw in Pepperdine, which I know I'm not trying to compare Pepperdine to Arkansas, but could that be an issue for Arkansas if Fresno State gets a little hot from three-point range and stretches out this defense?
Yeah, for sure. I think that Louisville actually coming into the game yesterday was one of the better three-point shooting teams, and they allowed them to shoot them the balls as much as they wanted to, and they defended the three ball pretty well. I also think that the game plan in trying to get as many rebounds as they can worked really well for them. So there will be opportunities for Fresno State to shoot the three ball. It's you got to capitalize on them, and you just can't let up throughout the entire game. Louisville didn't do that well in terms of three-point shooting in the first half, especially. They kind of caught fire near the end of the game, but Arkansas did really well to kind of quell the actual comeback and run away with the game by the end of the game. So it'll be tough, but I also think that if Fresno State is making the three-pointers, they have an opportunity.
The other disparity is, of course, Arkansas really went to the line a lot in that basketball game. You know, almost 20 more times than Louisville did.
Very aggressive on just driving down the paint.
And so I wonder if Fresno State, obviously being smart with the fouling. I haven't really seen a situation where foul trouble has cost the Bulldogs in any sense of the word this year. So I'm not worried maybe about that. But then again, if you face higher athletic players, better athletic players, sometimes you may catch yourself doing things you're not used to, defending ways you're not used to, and finding yourself in out-of-position areas where then suddenly you have to make it up on the back end and then have to foul in some certain way. So I wonder if that's going to be I would imagine that's going to be a factor in Saturday's game for the Bulldogs as well. But, yeah, I don't know. Daniel, did you get a chance to watch any of this or have any thoughts on this basketball side? I don't want to go to you if you yeah, but when you think about, like, physical teams and highly athletic teams and teams that clearly have, I would say, a talent disparity, it's you think of the great upsets in March Madness, it's usually the three-pointer. It's usually getting to the free throw line that can kind of even things out, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like all those things come to a factor, but I think the main thing is always just, like, mentality of a team more than anything, especially if you play down to your opponent. Like, you can never just, like, say, like, oh, they're that good, or, like, they're that bad. They're, like, we're going to be, like, we'll cruise through them because that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Like, if a team starts thinking that middle of the game, like, if Arkansas were to do that, that allows Fresno State to easily come back into it.
Well, what's interesting about the Fresno State roster is, I mean, Heibreder's from Clemson. He's been in those environments. He's been in those gyms before. And the international guys have played in those professional leagues where out in Europe. But I'm not necessarily totally comparing it to both things, but there's pressure there when you play for professionally out there for Fresno State. And so those guys to feel those environments, I think there's something to it. I don't think there's guys that can totally blink. I like DJ Stickman's the one I'm like, what environment have you played in, outside of this game in Arkansas? I wonder what he will respond to with this. And Zan Collins is kind of the same way in terms of it, right? So I think of those guys who not necessarily been in the Lions Den like in Arkansas, which I know it's, I don't think the game's played at their gym. I think it's going to be played somewhere else. I think it's like a semi-different arena. It's not going to be played at Arkansas's actual gym on Saturday, but it's going to be interesting to see how those guys respond with those experiences they've had before.
Yeah, this is also going to be one of the more athletic teams, as you stated. Trevon Brazil is a guy to look out for. He is a person who can create his own dunk, but also loves to do backdoor cuts to get the lobs. And we saw that at the end of the Louisville game to kind of put it away. So that is going to be one guy to look out for in terms of his athleticism. It's going to be on Fresno State to just be – they're going to have to key in on their defensive assignments and really – block the three-point line and really be able to defend any of this athleticism that Arkansas loves to use to kind of pull away from teams.
Yeah, 6'10 athletic. That's not a guy you usually have.
Yeah.
You know, like, highly mobile kind of guy. Fresno State, you can't really kind of find a guy on that roster that's going to be able to do that. So it's just a matter of defending well and being sound. It's going to be a fascinating game tomorrow. Of course, that'll be on – or excuse me, Saturday. And SEC Plus, SEC Network Plus, I think it's on. So
yep.
Just right on the primetime slot for Fresno State. All right, let's take a break because we got a long interview coming up here. We talked to Tyler Romo and Josh Henderson earlier, and this is the first time you're hearing this interview. Our Student Athlete of the Week, Tyler Romo from Emmanuel High School, and his coach coming up next on 1430 ESPN Fresno the Valley's local sports leader. All right. Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, we have our Student Athlete of the Week interview right here. Emmanuel's Tyler Romo had a great game against Templeton in the Central Section Championship for Division IV. So wanted to get him on the show, and we did. They actually stopped by yesterday, him and his head coach, Josh Henderson. So what you'll hear next is my full interview with them as they get set. They got Barstow High tomorrow in the state playoff semifinals. So here is my conversation with our Student Athlete of the Week, Tyler Romo from Emmanuel, and his head coach, Josh Henderson.
All right, welcome back to our Student Athlete of the Week interview for this week. The football season is wrapping up soon, but some teams still fighting for it here. And one of those teams, the Emmanuel Eagles, who we're excited to bring in for our Student Athlete of the Week, Tyler Romo, who joins us now along with head coach Josh Henderson. Guys, appreciate it being on the show today, and thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be here, and it's exciting that Tyler's being recognized. He certainly has worked hard all year on the field and off the field.
Tyler, excited to have you here, of course. And first off, Student Athlete of the Week for our station here, ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, which is a program we've been doing all throughout the year. You get it here at the end. How does it feel to be a Student Athlete of the Week for this week?
Yeah, I just I'm thankful for the recognition. Thankful just to the Lord that I could be in this place right now.
Certainly, and we're thankful to have you and highlight your season so far and talk about certainly a great performance in when it mattered most against Templeton. But, Coach, when you got the call a couple days ago, you know, you're talking about Tyler wanting him to be honored as a Student Athlete of the Week. What stuck out to you? What was, like, you know, your reaction to knowing we wanted to have Tyler here?
Well, one, you know, very thankful that you guys chose to recognize, you know, Emmanuel. And I think Tyler is really an excellent example of who we are. Our theme this year has been victory, based on victory in the Lord. And right after the scripture we focused on is about being steadfast and movable. And, you know, Tyler's really excelled on the field. And I think that has to do with his consistency, his steadfastness. Tyler's a warrior of warriors, and you've seen that week in and week out. So what he did at Templeton was an excellent game, but he's been doing that every day for 4 years. He's a four-year starter. So excited that he's being recognized and that he really is just a good example of who we are as a football team.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tyler, you know, you've seen it all, it feels like, in high school football as a four-year starter, right? And but it feels like this season especially, you guys are really rolling here, you know, 13-0 through the Central Section playoffs. You're into the state playoffs here now. Talk about just the culmination of getting to this part of the season, getting to this level for Emmanuel, and how exciting this whole year has been for you guys.
It's been really exciting. We've been building the last 4 years. There's a lot of guys that were on that squad with me when we were all freshmen. There's about five of us starting as freshmen. So yeah, we've just been building, and it's super exciting to see how far we've came in that short period of time.
Coach, do you speak to that, you know, the journey, right, with him and especially the other freshmen who now are seniors in this group? You feel like it's been building to this point. You guys now obviously into the state playoffs. I know you got a game to worry about, but do you afford yourself to look back at kind of how you got here to 13-0 this season?
You know, the journey and the process is what we all love. The outcomes are absolutely fantastic. But I was just thinking back, you know, Tyler, to Tyler's freshman year, we were playing Reedley at homecoming. You know, this is 4 years ago, and I remember him getting chewed out by our defensive coordinator, who happens to be my brother and his uncle, and going to him going, hey man, he's just a freshman, and not that we haven't all, but you know, Tyler has been battling along with his teammates. He mentioned five of them starting as freshmen, the entire group, and even now we have groups of sophomores up that didn't play JV to be part of this. So I think the process and sacrifice, when I think about this group of guys, you know, they've been willing to love each other, make sacrifices for the team. That's really evident. And you know, the other thing that stands out is just how much they love to practice. You know, they like being out there. They like being together. And so, yeah, the journey's been amazing. We were 3-8 three seasons ago.
Yeah.
So for these guys to keep on and believe before they saw the outcome, I think says a lot about Tyler and his teammates. There's 20 seniors on this football team, and just a lot of love and respect for each one of them.
You really, you Coach mentioned it, you know, really thinking back to those practices 4 years ago, Tyler, you know, tell me just, you know, what was the mental fortitude to kind of get through that? Because, you know, kids at a young age, sometimes they get disenfranchised by the losing, the tough nature of how the season goes. But what kept you steadfast through those tough times?
Yeah, those practices were really rough, but we had really great seniors on that team. My brother and older cousin really helped me get through those that year. Yeah, that's who I'd give the credit to for that.
What ways did they help you through that? Like, what were some things you kind of recall from what they did to help you, or things they said to kind of give you the motivation to keep going?
Well, my older brother, it was just like a mutual like understanding. Like, if I mess up, it'd just be like, he'd just look at me and I'd know what to do. And then my older cousin, he kind of knew everything. So if I really needed to know anything, he'd just point me in the right direction.
Certainly. Coach, you see those relationships between the brothers and the cousins and those that try to build up to where you are now. But you talk about that interaction between the family, right, and how it really just kind of garnered the best out of Tyler, especially where he is now and what he does on the football field, especially talking about even the game he did last week. You know, tell me a little bit about that familial bond and the way you see it.
You know, what's been special is we've been able to come out here and become part of Emmanuel. You know, so I'm fortunate to coach, you know, my three nephews on this football team and one of my sons who's now playing at Dort. But we've been able to become part of this team, you know, and I give Tyler a lot of respect for, and all of our guys, that even in the hard years, they showed that respect to their team leaders. So I appreciate the guys who've come before them, our family members and also our non-family members, because I think the big idea here that you know, of course it's amazing to do it with your family. I mean, that is tremendous. I've got my brother, my nephews, and I love that, and I'm proud of them. But each member of the team,
yeah,
you know, and they've come in and embraced that, and Emmanuel's kind of embraced us. And now what these guys are doing right now, our sophomores and freshmen that are on varsity, we have 55 guys. Last night we counted 10 of those guys are freshman pull-ups from JV. So the same thing that Tyler was able to look up, and he referenced, you know, William and Jason, he was looking up to those guys and their senior class. These freshmen and sophomores right now that are some outstanding young men, they're looking up to Tyler and learning those same lessons. And at the same time, you know, our goal is that each generation becomes stronger. And I'm really proud of Tyler and the older guys for that they want more for the guys behind them. This is a phenomenal year, you know, and it's hard to say more after this. But, yeah, I love the way it's going. And it's very special to be experiencing it with family and as a team and to see how they add value.
Yeah.
You know, that makes you proud.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some of the performances this year. And Tyler, of course, the one that got you the recognition, the one against Templeton, where we were doing the broadcast at Minarets, and Paul Metters is the scoreboard guy watching, and suddenly he just sees it tick up, 21-0, 28-0, all that crazy. You know, you guys get out to the big lead. But Tyler, best production in the ground game all year with the yardage. Averaging 14.1 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns to add your 17 total. I know I hear you're a defensive warrior too on that side of the ball. I think you were involved in 9 tackles in that game from what I'm seeing in the statistics side. So what side of the ball are you more proud of in the way you've played in that game against Templeton?
I definitely take pride in defense because that's what I've played all my life. So, yeah, and offensively, I really give credit to the O-line because they're massive guys,
yeah,
making giant holes. So That's shout out to them.
I've been hearing about this line from some very physical line, and I know you want to give, as every good running back should, gives credit to the O-line in the sense, but it's a team effort, right, Coach? And what were you seeing from Tyler, his ability, you know, to really just break out some big runs, big chunk yardage, you know, like I said, best yardage production all year to give you guys, obviously, an edge over Templeton in that game on the road?
Yeah, I mean – like I said, Tyler's a warrior, but he runs that ball, you know, like a bull. And the thing about it is I think people underestimate Tyler. I mean, you take last week's game, and on just two runs alone, he broke, you know, more than two tackles. And we're talking about really good football teams. So I think what Tyler does, again, he has a great offensive line. Our receivers have done a good job. Our quarterback's doing a tremendous job for us. But I think people underestimate his ability to break tackles, you know, when those things aren't there. And you saw that last week on not only our opening run, but we had a fourth down run on a fake punt where he was able to break several tackles. So, and then even finishing the runs. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing you'll see with Tyler is he's always falling forward. And after contact, don't be surprised if he gets 4 or 5 more yards. Our ultimate goal is 4 yards per carry, but often he's getting that after contact. So he's done a tremendous job carrying the ball.
Have you worked that? Is that something you work on, Tyler, as when you were doing the running back side of things, you know, the break tackles? Is it in what specific way do you feel like why it's so hard for you to be tackled on the football field?
Why do I feel it's so hard to tackle me on the football field? Because hard question.
Maybe you're just in the moment. Maybe it's reactionary. I don't know. Maybe it's just instincts. I know Coach sees it. I don't know if it's something you consciously do. I know you're a little bit of a taller guy, so maybe the legs get a little harder to wrap around. Is that what I imagine is the case for you, or is it just simply you got an ability to just kind of power forward over some players?
Yeah, I'd say it's just want to. Coach talked about it. To do something, you got to want to do it. So I think that's what comes into play. Like, I just want to get more yards for the team. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, certainly. Coach, I don't know if you want to echo the sentiment or if you give me a little scouting report. Is it necessarily just his height, or is it just the power he generates? What do you see there from Tyler?
You know, he's a gifted player. He always has been. He's been playing football since – how old were you when you started playing football?
Second grade.
When you're you've been playing football since your second grade all the way up. But he mentioned the want to, but I think this man plays the game with a level of force that most people aren't ready to equal. You know, now at this time and where we are, you're going to have other guys on the field with that kind of force of desire and heart. But again, I think what stands out there, you know, last week we were playing some great players. And what stood out with Tyler, I think, is that he looked like, you know, the best running back on the field. And they had some great players. But there's something coming out from the inside. You know, he said that want to. And he's a full force, fall forward running back. So you've got to be ready for heavy contact. You know, and most backs are looking to, you know, make a move or spin. And Tyler does make moves, but it's usually after contact.
Yeah.
So he's a contact first running back. And I think that makes it hard on the defense. You know, they've got to get off blocks, and then next thing you know, they've got a guy with a full head of steam coming at him who's not getting out of the way. So, yeah.
Just, you know, in the way you protect the ball, too, just the one fumble. I know you wish you had it back. I know you're probably thinking about it. But just the one fumble, you protect the ball very well throughout the year. And I know you know that's a priority. So, you know, taking care of the football, being sure in everything you kind of do. But I want to go to the defensive side as well, because this is where this team has really found a way to really dominate in the schedule here. And I'm just looking at it, and all I see is a bunch of sevens and zeros when it comes to that, outside of the El Capitan game. So tell me about this defense. What separates it from a lot of different teams? What do you guys do that frustrates opponents?
I believe we swarm opponents. We group tackle and really just overwhelm them, because we can tackle so well. Our corners are great tacklers this season. Our outside guys are great, and our interior is also pretty good.
pretty good to have a lot of those traits, right, Coach? But, you know, when he talks about a defense and one that continues to just pitch those kind of performances, one has to, you know, one has to wonder how this team finds a way to show up every week when it comes to that aspect, because 7 points, 0 points, all on that scoreboard, that's remarkable stuff. So what separates this defense for you?
Gosh, you know, our identity, you know, these guys are, we are really proud to be followers of Christ. And I think you go, what, how does that impact the game? Well, here's the thing, our guys, they're on a pathway where they take the coaching. You know, they want, one of the things we talk about is seeing the truth. And so our guys, they, you know, they've been able to see areas where earlier in the season and other times where we're not as strong and we have to improve. And even though we're tackling so well, we got to look at the film from last week and look at what have we done that could potentially be less than the standard, yeah, you know, of what we want to represent and who we are. So I think this group of guys specifically, they're continuing, you know, to, in spite of winning, you know, 13 games, they're able to take the criticism. They're able to take the coaching. They recognize that if we stop growing and evolving as tacklers, even, we got to work our angles. We got to work our tackles. We got to work different techniques in tackling. So I think what's special about this group of guys, again, is they're on a pathway to growing every week. I think we've had our two most physical practices of the season this week.
Really?
And that gives me tremendous hope, because the team we're playing, Barstow, is the most physical team we've ever played against in my time at Emmanuel.
Yeah.
And we've got to not only meet that, but exceed it. And they've accepted the challenge. So, you know, what has set them apart in their ability to tackle is recognizing that they got to keep becoming sharper. We've got to get better. We've got to evolve, because our opponents are, you know. So that's what makes me most proud of them and our coaches. You know, I'll tell you what, when I'm watching our practices and I see the way our coaches are engaging, it makes me go, yeah, there's an interaction between brothers, player to player, but also coach to player that is still inspiring. You know, they're still taking the coach and we're all evolving, and that's exciting.
Tyler, to speak to Coach's point, you know, I want to know from the psychology of a player, and you mentioned all the factors to it, but as a player, you know, to avoid that complacency, to avoid the idea that, you know, we what we're doing is good enough to win. He mentioned the tough practices. How does a player like you and like all the other players on the roster avoid that kind of noise or thoughts in your head of like, what? This is just what we do. This is how we do it. And I don't need to improve because we're doing what we're doing. You know, tell me about the psychology of that as a player.
Yeah, I'd pin that on accountability from one another, keeping each other sharp. Last week we had a devotional about sharpening each other. Mm-hmm. So I just give it to each, all of us, keeping each other accountable.
And I think the fascinating part about it, and I talked to Coach Pincotti about this earlier this year from McLean, because they kind of had a similar path like you guys. Just really, you know, a lot of large margin of victory. Your closest game was that McLean game. So I ask about, from a coaching standpoint, how you prepare a team for a game like this coming up against Barstow, where you're going to get into tight situations, and how your players react to tight situations, playoff feeling, playoff, do or die down, stuff like that. How do you prepare a team, which, let's be frank, hasn't seen really that, Avenal was a close game, you know, McLean was a closer game too, but how do you prepare as a coach for the teams when they see those moments in front of them that they may face on Friday?
You know, I think the thing that our guys have done a good job of is we've prepared for every game, recognizing our opponents at their best and recognizing in any fight you can lose. You know, we know every week, and our theme is victory, and that doesn't mean we think we're better than anybody's. I think that what we're saying is we want to be on the pathway to victory, number one, following the Lord as believers, and two, as a football team, We have got to recognize that this team's going to bring us our best. So I'll tell you what, we see the best in our opponents. And I think these guys have done a good job of that. And having, you know, last year, we take a year ago, and I mean, I think this is really helpful in the preparation process.
Yeah.
You know, we go to the semifinals and we lose to Shafter. And in that game, we had a couple special teams errors, a few big missed assignments, and we had some turnovers. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look at our pillars, you know, breaking tackles, turnovers, of course, tackling guys and blocking, our guys recognize that those process-oriented factors are what are going to take us there. So I would say in terms of the intensity, yes, higher. The stakes, higher. But in our off-season interviews, a lot of guys mentioned perseverance. You know, so I think it's the locker room leadership that keeps a team sharp. It's those things. So how, you know, I think we have a common vision, you know, that we all believe in. I think people believe in who we are. I think we have a standard amongst the players that is held in the locker room. Mm-hmm. So there's a handoff that happens not only on the field, but they have their room and they know what they want to do. It's not the coach's goals, it's the team's goals. So I think those things are very real for us. And then film study and all the things that go along with it, we can clearly see, you know, last week they had amazing skilled athletes and a very tough line. Mm-hmm. This week they are a violent football team. And if, you know, and I think that stands out. And again, we came out with our two most physical practices. Well, what's that telling everyone in the room? We're giving ourselves the best possible pathway to victory to win this game. So I'm proud of these guys for how they're preparing. You know, I know they will rise to the moment, but I also know when we fall, it'll be to our training. Mm-hmm. And their training is steadfast. And so we're excited about it.
Tyler, you mentioned the physical practices, and I want to ask just lastly here, you know, this Barstow game, you feeling it in the prep? You're feeling excited? What's the anticipation level, knowing the standard of practices that have been set so far, and your anticipation level for a game like this on Friday?
Yeah, I'm really excited. The practices have been very physical, and I'm excited that the team's just accepting the challenge of facing such a physical and great opponent, really. So, yeah.
And I hate to bring it up because I always hate to do it to a senior, but it's always interesting to think about how it could be your last, and you try not to think about that or anything like that. But have you been a little reflective this season as a senior, as you near the end? You have two football games left, and you know it potentially here. You know, do you think about that throughout the season?
For sure, a little bit. I've thought of how we started and where we are now, and I'm just thankful that we could accomplish so much.
Yeah, and we'll certainly hope you can accomplish a little bit more with a game against Barstow. And Coach, lastly, just at the end here, what are the keys to victory for Emmanuel on Friday against Barstow?
You know, the pathway to victory this week that we talked about is tackling. Step number one, tackling, because this is a team that they run a heavy package and they have some of the bigger and stronger guys. So we have to meet them in the heavy package. We think we have the guys to do it. They actually have more big bodies, so our guys will have to go two ways, but we have to tackle their skilled athletes. They have more, I would say, game-changing players at every position. I mean, we're watching the game and there's guys who've got the ball, you know, maybe once or twice a game, but they can score. Mm-hmm. So we have to be excellent in tackling. And you know, that's an every week thing, but in a game like this, turnovers. You know, we can't turn the ball over and we have to continue to possess the ball, you know, win the time of possession, and we need to create some big plays. You know, we have guys, we did it last week, we got up 21-0. If we can go out there and not only have long drives, but get some big plays in there. We do have guys who can make big plays. We think the game could definitely go our way. You know, special teams, you know, that's always a factor. Last week we were able to capitalize on a fake punt. Tyler had one of his longer runs of the game, and also an onside kick. So, you know, the focus for us to be able to be a plus one or two plays, maybe a drive, maybe a touchdown. But to win on special teams is really important for us. So I think, you know, being able to play holistic football at this point in the season is really important. The details matter, that our guys are focused not on these, you know, big dreams and big outcomes, but the very detail of their job, that's what they're thinking about, that's what they're meditating on. And when it all comes down to it, trusting in the Lord, because he's our strength. You know, that's what our school's all about. We want to be light in the valley, you know, and we know there's a lot of believers playing this game, and it's exciting to be part of really the body of believers playing football. But we're a school, not just individual believers. We're a school trying to represent, you know, the gospel of Jesus Christ. So I think that's a challenge. I really do think our kids, you know, have been, they take that challenge seriously. And what does that mean? It means to really love each other through a sacrificial effort. You know, and if our guys do that, we have a chance to win this football game, a very good chance.
We can't wait to see it.
Thank you, Coach.
That. And we'll appreciate, and by the way, the invite's here if you guys end up winning that thing, regardless or not. We love having you guys here and appreciate it as always. And exciting times for the Emmanuel Eagles as they get set to take on Barstow and potentially play for a state final. Tyler, congratulations on being Student Athlete of the Week. I'm sure you're trying to figure out where you're going to put that giant-looking check thing, whether you got room in your room or anything like that. So maybe put it in the locker room. Who knows? But anyways, congrats, and we wish you luck and good health in the game on Friday.
Thank you.
Hey, Phil, thank you.
Yep.
And ESPN Radio for what you do for our community. Love what you guys are about and how you highlight young men and their positive achievement. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Appreciate it as always, and appreciate you guys. So good luck on Friday.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right after this on 1430 ESPN.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again in anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, man. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right. Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Hour number two of our show here live at Fashion Furniture. And good news, the Black Friday clearance event has been extended past Black Friday here into the start of December. Fashion has hundreds of items up to 70%, plus 100 dining room sets discounted for immediate delivery. Sleep Retreat Inside Fashion Furniture has closeout mattresses at 50% off and foundations at 50% off. Adjustable bases starting at $299 and free if you buy a Beautyrest Black mattress, plus up to 24 months free financing. Be sure to come by Fashion Furniture. The Black Friday clearance event extended now here into December. Fashion Furniture, nothing like it in all of California. One more hour before we send it to Detroit for the Lions and the Cowboys, and we'll have that starting in about, in about 10 minutes over on 790. You'll have Lakers pregame as they take on Toronto. The Raptors in Toronto should be an interesting matchup between those two teams. 4:30 tip-off for the Lakers over there on 790 tonight. We'll have Laker basketball tomorrow as it's the back end of a back-to-back for the Lakers as they play Boston, which means my show is only 45 minutes tomorrow. We'll take you up to 3:45 for pregame of Lakers and Celtics 4 p.m. tip-off from Boston between those two teams. Hour number two, good to be here. And speaking of the NBA talk, let's do a little NBA talk as we have Tim Veer and Daniel here still. And Daniel, you know, I like the kid, but your team continues to just find its way into the news in the worst ways possible. And I think there's a fascinating, idea that's percolated out of this whole situation. But I want to start with the reaction of Chris Paul being removed from the basketball team. His retirement was not on his own volition, apparently. The farewell tour will not continue at the Intuit Dome for Chris Paul. Dismissed from the team for all kinds of different accusations and all kinds of different they said situations. It's not how you want to see your superstar point guard go for a guy who's been on that Clippers team for so long. But, Daniel, how do you feel about this Chris Paul dismissal story that we have failed to cover over the last day or two.
Well, when I saw it that night, I couldn't believe it at first. I thought it was a joke, and then I was like, I checked his story. I'm like, oh my God, this is real. And like, I'm really just devastated because I grew up, because I've always been a Clippers fan, I grew up watching Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see him, like, when I saw he was being signed and like for a farewell tour, I was like, oh yeah, he'll be the first Clipper to get his jersey retired. Come to find out, this probably isn't going to happen now.
it's going to take a while before that gets all rectified.
But, like, I don't blame him for anything he said, or at least what they're saying.
Well, the team stinks.
Exactly. Like, he just wants to win. That's all it is. The man wants to win in his final year. Like, who wouldn't?
Yeah. Who Tanvir, you've been independently observing this situation. Is there anybody in the right in this situation, or is it just an ugly basketball breakup?
I mean, I can see the perspective from both sides. Chris Paul sitting here, as you said, right, wanting to win in his final year. Everybody wants to go out a winner, and he just feels like the Clippers are just not that team right now. You know, even before this season started, I had put out there that I think the Clippers are going to make the Western Conference Finals. But they have certainly not been the team that I thought they were going to be. They just do not have any cohesiveness. So I don't blame Chris Paul for leaving that situation and trying to go elsewhere.
So what I alluded to at the beginning of this segment, though, is the idea that with the Lakers, right across the other side, feels almost like the perfect spot potentially for a Chris Paul landing spot because, as he told Marcus Spears, ESPN's Marcus Spears, who said on Thursday, which is today, does he want to retire? Is he done? And Chris Paul says he was told absolutely not. He does want to play, and he wants to win. And a team that's on fire right now, making some moves in this NBA season here at the top, is the L.A. Lakers. Now, they just lost to Phoenix on Monday. The Phoenix team better than people think they were going in. But I find that the most logical spot, Chris Paul doesn't have to move in his final year. And I wonder what he would be to a Laker roster addition if they consider to go approach him for a season here, for the half the season.
Yeah, I certainly think L.A., the Lakers, that is, would certainly be an option. I think his relationship with LeBron James has always been detailed as a good one, and so I think that could be a good fit. The Oklahoma City Thunder was another thought process that I had in terms of where Chris Paul can land if he wants to go out a winner, and this is a team that he has played for before. I think that could certainly be a destination. I think in terms of what I'm looking at, I think CP3 is more than likely going to go back to a team that he's already played for.
So
I'm thinking, yeah, San Antonio Spurs. I'm thinking Oklahoma City Thunder.
The Warriors?
The Warriors, possibly. I think the Lakers are the one outlier where I think he would go to a new team because of the relationship he has with LeBron.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other outlier teams that would be, like, interesting to see him on if you put him in.
I don't see anybody in the Eastern Conference.
No, I don't see it either. Denver's kicking in my head a little bit as a team, but I don't know if that totally – Jokic being the guy you want to have the ball most, I don't know if,
yeah,
Chris Paul totally makes sense with that offense. But then again, Jokic makes everybody better. So.
Right. And I also think besides the winning aspect, he wants to be in a situation where he – is heard within the locker room, has,
yeah,
a good relationship, and I think those four teams that we listed are probably the most likely spots he's going to go to.
Anything like Minnesota, I'm trying to think.
What if we send him to New Orleans?
New Orleans would be in.
Yeah.
Well, no.
I don't know.
So what's the machination of this? Because do the Clippers still own his rights to his contract? Do they have to trade him?
No,
so
they do.
The
do
Clippers have to agree to trade him, right? They can't. I think they released him. Did they not?
I don't think it was a release. I read something that's saying that they can still trade him technically, but he might just ask for a buyout.
Interesting.
It's a fascinating part of this, right? Because it's the Clippers that have to decide, you know, what will happen. But I wonder if the NBAPA has to step in here and maybe file a grievance for Chris Paul into this. Even though Chris Paul, I think, was a PA president at one point,
yeah,
right? So he knows exactly what kind of steps he would need to take to get out of this situation. But it's going to be fascinating to kind of see it all develop in the NBA. I just want to touch on that. The other big main storyline, of course, when it comes to the trade conversation is Giannis Antetokounmpo, who, as of last night, had to leave a game a little bit early because of an ankle injury, but I don't think anybody's totally worried about that when you get Giannis in that situation. But Giannis is now potentially on the market, and I think the race to get him will certainly be a fascinating one. And I wonder what his trade value is in this version of the NBA. Giannis clearly cares about winning. Giannis is 30 years old. Giannis has won a title already. He's almost averaging a triple-double there already in another great season individually. If I'm a Laker fan, I think I'd be delusions of grandeur of trying to add him maybe a little bit, but there is potentially a path. It would take a lot for that to happen, but I'm certainly interested in what the trade market is for Giannis in terms of that. And I wonder what you guys make of that in terms of where he could potentially land.
I think young, up-and-coming playoff contender is more than likely going to be the spot for Giannis. When I think of those teams, I'm thinking probably Houston could be a landing spot for him. San Antonio would be another landing spot for him. I know that the Spurs are aggressively trying to trade for Giannis Antetokounmpo, but I know they don't want to necessarily get rid of one of their two young guards, so that's going to be a very difficult decision for the Spurs if they want to do that. I also think, you know, LA could be another possibility, which either of those teams I think could possibly get Giannis Antetokounmpo, even though the Clippers are not in, you know, the greatest of positions. I think he could turn that team around and turn them into a real dominant team. And on the east side, I think New York.
Yeah.
I know, I remember when Giannis was going through his contract situation, New York was a big possibility, and he almost did go to the Knicks. And so I think that could be one of the teams in the East that could trade for Giannis.
They have five potential trades on ESPN front page today.
Yeah.
In terms of it. And I was kind of spelling it out to you guys before the segment, but I want to give it to the people who are out there. The Giannis to New York trade would involve Giannis and Jericho Sims.
Massive piece.
Going to the Bucks for Bodega Cat. I'm still going to chow this name. Pacome Dadiet. Probably wrong. Tyler Kolek and a first-rounder that's top eight protected via the Wizards, or it'll be a second-round selection of 26 and 27. You also get that 28 first-round picks up. Because the worst of the Bucks or Trailblazers or Knicks, and then you get the 2030 pick swap as well, first rounder, and then the 2032 first round pick swap as well.
I think three first round picks is going to be the minimum, regardless of the players involved in the trade. I'm trying to think of the Luka Doncic trade and see where you can kind of compare.
Well, that's the market, right?
Right.
But then again, we all know what's skewed there with that market in terms of it, because I think NBA executives are kidding themselves if they think they can get that price on the dollar.
You're never going to.
For that, you know.
Yeah, Nico Harrison price is different than any other price.
I'm trying to think of, like, worst ways to set the market for anything in sports. Is it the Nico Harrison trade and the market it set for what it costs to get a Luka Doncic, or is it the price tag that the Browns paid for Deshaun Watson and the market
the
of quarterback?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, the worst, like, overpays or underpays in the history of sports and what it's set in terms of the conversations. And so I think there's, like, a collective NBA acceptance that what happened with Dallas and LA is never going to happen again.
Yeah.
I think
you can say that about both of the trades that you talked about, the Deshaun Watson trade as well. But yeah, that Luka Doncic trade will go down as one of the craziest things ever, and I don't think there will be an NBA team that will repeat that in this cycle.
Yeah. If he gets traded, what is your most likely landing spot? If you had to bet money on it.
I'm not saying this just because I'm a fan. I genuinely think the Spurs would probably be the team that would trade for him. I think they really do want to pair Victor Wembanyama with a superstar. They tried it with Kevin Durant. They weren't able to do that. I think they do it with Giannis.
They would have to take a lot.
It would take a lot, and I think it would be a tough pill to swallow, losing Stephon Castle or Dylan Harper or De'Aaron Fox, but I think one of those three guys is going to be gone.
What about you, Daniel?
Well, if we're talking about young playoff teams or, like, teams trying to make the playoffs, I give Orlando a shot.
Orlando?
Yeah.
That could be an outside-the-box pick. I think New York would be the other team. I think New York or San Antonio
would
be the
team. I'd argue maybe even Chicago.
I don't think so.
I think I like Houston. I kind of really do like Houston as a team just because of the nature of the way they've been transactioning, like the way they have been going at it in terms of building their roster. I think they're a fascinating team when it comes to their roster build and the way they are aggressive in the market, you know, the way they went after Kevin Durant in terms of that, and I would imagine it is win now for the Rockets, especially the Van Vliet injury causing, you know, things to shift for them in terms of what they did. They're not a complete roster now, which they know they need to fix, and I think there's some certain pieces they could go after to get Giannis on it.
I also think Houston is the team that would be most likely to trade because they can trade that one-for-one piece, Alperen Şengün being that power forward, and these other teams not necessarily having a power forward that could slot in right there for Milwaukee. So I think that's a good pick as well.
It's kind of the need versus just the possibility of adding the guy, you know?
And so if I'm Milwaukee and I'm looking at Alperen Şengün coming in versus a point guard from the Spurs, I think I would probably take Şengün.
Yeah. It's going to be Giannis with Durant would be fascinating.
It's going to be crazy.
What do you got?
Oh, no, this is baseball news for your team.
My Red Sox?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Johan Oviedo, that'll send Johnston Garcia back to the Pirates.
Joe Snixon Garcia?
That's how you say it.
You're stopping my show to give me justice?
Yeah. Hey, it's baseball news.
You're giving me – we're deep in NBA talk, Daniel, and you're just going to interrupt – with Red Sox trade acquisitions versus a guy who I don't think would ever crack our outfield in terms of it. Hey, I get it. I get it. You want to break the news. I don't even see it on my timeline.
It just popped up as a notification
okay.
for me.
All right. Well, I'll have to recover from that one.
Don't be too sad.
Jorge, where do you think Giannis is going?
He's going to
Jorge there?
He's going to Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, all right. That's one can dream, going. Right? One can dream.
A dream.
I guess a bonus.
That's a reality, bro.
What'd you say, Jorge?
That's a reality. Look, his wife is from the Valley, right?
I know.
So he's got ties to the Valley. What's the closest professional basketball team to the Valley? Sacramento. Yep. Boom. There. Done.
All right. Okay. I know I'm not taking it seriously, but I'll oh my God. I appreciate your candor and your input, Jorge, as I always do. Anyways, now I'm seeing the trade news. You just, you know.
It's a five-player deal.
We don't even know who the players are. Is it player to be named later, 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah.
Hey, tell that kid, this isn't baseball time. This is basketball. What is he talking about?
Until the Giants trade for Aaron Judge, I'm not talking baseball March, right? That's what we're going to do.
Arson Judge.
I was thinking of the Mookie Betts trade as one of the underpays of all time.
Yeah.
I'm like thinking about that now.
Oh, for sure.
And now I'm irritated. So.
Is Phil aware of the Neymar price tag?
Yeah. I am aware of how bad Neymar's career has gone since like the Brazil World Cup.
It's it's a fall from grace, but I think all of those transactions really have put into perspective how crazy the variable of a knowledgeable GM is, and so I think in this Giannis situation, I think it's gonna take a big haul for anybody to grab him.
Do you think we're gonna get our like mind blown by the trade? The haul eventually that we get, or are we gonna like which end of the spectrum versus overpay and underpay? Like, where are we gonna land?
I think it will probably be an overpay. I think you're probably gonna get 2 or 3 solid players along with 3 first round draft picks. And if you think that is worth Giannis Antetokounmpo, I think it'll probably be worth it. I think you're gonna have to get a ring in that scenario. If we're being serious, I think if the team that trades for Giannis doesn't win a ring this year and kind of get trounced by OKC, which is more likely going to be the juggernaut of this Western Conference.
You got to be confident that what you're doing is not going to be defeated by this OKC team.
Right.
I've seen something where OKC could trade for Giannis.
I don't think they need to.
They don't need to. They could just keep who they have.
They could be the greatest team in NBA history, Daniel. Yeah. They don't need to.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear those words ever.
they're legitimately with a real opportunity to be better than that Warriors team.
Yeah.
You know, via the regular season.
It's crazy. So, again, whoever has that trade in mind has to have the conviction that you can beat this Oklahoma City Thunder team and then go on to beat the best Eastern Conference or Western Conference team whenever they have the chance in the finals, if he goes to a Western Conference
team. The Rockets were that close on opening night.
And that would be a
that's
team.
That's what I'm having that
conversation. That would be a team.
My Clippers almost beat them until they blew up in the fourth quarter.
And now they're blowing up their roster and their entire existence, and there soon will be a lawsuit to take away Kawhi Leonard's contract.
Move us back to San Diego at this point.
Move you back to Buffalo.
Oh, there you go. The Buffalo Braves.
Yeah, all right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're picking the Week 14 games. Bonatti Blitz is next on 1430 ESPN.
I really can't stay.
But baby, it's
all
cold
right.
Outside.
Welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, here on this Thursday. This Thursday, and wow, what a wonderful thing to open up to in my CBS score bug. 21-5 Sixers over the Warriors right now in the first quarter.
Hey, Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe playing some good ball.
The Warriors playing not good ball.
Some not so good ball. The less the said, the better.
It looks like Steph Curry's not playing, so I guess I'll leave it at that.
I don't
think
Steph Curry was playing against the Thunder.
No,
he's
a little banged up.
Yeah.
A little banged up. Okay. Warriors playing bad. Lakers playing in 5 minutes, just a heads up. Over on 790, pregame going on right now from north of the border in Toronto. How about those Raptors? Raptors are fun.
Yeah. Scotty Barnes doing pretty good.
Yeah. I sound a little more relaxed because I am. I'm sitting in the Z-Cliner Model 3 Plus, the fabric power rocking sleep recliner. Power headrest, lumbar, heat, and massage. Should I get the massage going, or is that going to affect my it's getting me there. All right. It's got memory foam, remote control for your control sitting right here next to me, and USB charging for all your needs as well.
That's the best part.
I would need a charger. I'm need my phone to charge here. Oh, yeah, the USB right
there
on
you
the
go.
End of the remote right there.
Wow.
So. Z-Cliner here at Fashion Furniture. Nothing like it in all of California. Okay. It's the Bonatti Blitz, which is brought to you by Grocery Outlet. Grocery Outlet, of course, all your holiday specials. If you want to get ready for the big games over this next month here, of course, we're going to go over some of them in the next minute here. But the Bonatti Blitz brought to you by Grocery Outlet. Go to your locations in Northwest Fresno, Southeast Fresno, Downtown Fresno, and Kerman and Sanger. We're not going to pick the Thursday night game, but we're going to go through the rest, and we're also not going to pick the Monday night game either. Jorge, you're part of this, so be sure to make your pick. We're going to go me, then Tanvir, and then Jorge. Are you ready, Jorge, for the Bonatti Blitz?
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not? It's not like it's a chore or anything, Jorge.
Enthusiasm popping off.
Can't wait. Cue the music. There it is. Week 14. Four teams on bye. Niners, Giants, Panthers, Patriots. We'll see you next week. And we start in Atlanta. Battle of the Birds. Seattle taking on the Falcons. It's Kirk Cousins going to go up against this tough, tough Seattle defense. Seahawks, 7-point favorite on the road. Seattle, very much a team that I would consider a top team in this NFL, including the way they play on both sides of the football. Although I'd like a little more out of their offense, especially from the run game and the pass game, a little bit more. A little lacking from the last couple of weeks. But outside of it, Atlanta looks like a lost team, a team losing to a New York the last week. I don't know if I have any confidence in them getting a win. Kirk Cousins is going to be running for his life against the Seattle defense. I'm picking the Seahawks to win and get their 10th win on the year.
Yeah, I am going to pick Seattle as well, but I think the Seahawks have been kind of lacking on the offensive side of the ball over the last couple of weeks, and I'm not saying that it's a doomsday scenario for the Seahawks, but I feel like if they want to make a deep playoff run, and a lot of people are predicting them to go deep in the playoffs, they got to do a little bit better on the offensive side of the ball. JSA needs to be involved more, so yeah, I'm going to go with Seattle, but I think it'll be a closer game than people expect.
By the way, Jorge made him his number one team in his power rankings.
Interesting. Okay.
Jorge, what do you got?
Yeah, I got Seattle in this one. I feel like they're going to, you know, they're just a better team overall. Better team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Pittsburgh at Baltimore. Baltimore, 5.5-point favorite. I wouldn't be inclined that they would cover in this situation. It's going to be nasty in Pittsburgh, or in Baltimore, excuse me. It looks like a little rainy, 42 degrees. Not going to be fun on that side of the country. You know, I don't know quite the situation of Aaron Rodgers heading into this game. It looks like it's going to be a game-time decision for that. And Lamar Jackson looks compromised as well. What is the difference maker in this game? I guess I can go Derrick Henry, but really, he was expected to run all over that Cincy defense last week. But this Pittsburgh defense has real trouble stopping the run. So logic tells me pick Baltimore here, and I think I will by a field goal.
Yeah, logic will tell you that, but I'm going to go against the logic because I feel like the AFC North has been going against logic this entire year. I'm going to pick the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think Jalen Warren can really get this running game going against this Ravens front. I think Kenneth Gainwell will also have an impact. DK Metcalf has to come up big. He's been a disappointment for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, and I don't think this Baltimore Ravens offense is playing as good as we think that they can on paper. So I think the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, as much as they were gashed by the same play last week, I think they will come back with a good performance, and I think the Steelers win.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Steelers. You know, I think Rodgers said it best, like they were, that the entire team was playing bad. It started with himself, so I think that was kind of a wake-up call to the whole entire team, and I feel like they're going to do better this week, and they're facing a Ravens team that's nowhere near a Ravens team that we knew last year, so yeah, Steelers.
Okay. Next up, Tennessee and Cleveland in Cleveland. Both teams combined for 4 wins on the year. Cleveland at least has an elite defense. It's going to be snowing. It's going to be rough. You want to guess the over-under in this game real quick? You got it?
Oh, jeez. It's got to be like
33.5.
Oh, my goodness.
They have Tennessee and Cleveland. I think Cam Ward's got a little juice from last couple weeks, although last week against Jacksonville wasn't totally doing it for it, and he might be running for his life against Cleveland. I've just talked myself back into the Browns. Browns find a 4th win here. At home.
Yeah, I think that Shedeur Sanders should finally get back on track against the Titans. I don't think this Titans defense is anything special. I'm going to give a little bit of a bold prediction. I think Myles Garrett beats the sack record this week.
Oh, my goodness. He's got to get to, like, 5 sacks today.
And he's done it before, wow. And I think this Titans offensive line is not good enough, and I think he'll do it again.
Jorge, what do you got?
Yeah, I think the Browns are going to take it. They didn't look... They didn't look too bad against the Niners. You know, they score an offense, and I think that if they got everything, you know, going for them, they should win this game easily.
He needs 4 sacks to beat the record.
Yeah. All right. That's possible. Next up, Washington at Minnesota, the Commanders and the Vikings in a battle of quarterback positions that I would argue I think the Minnesota Vikings would love to have Marcus Mariota on their roster in terms of it. And I think he is really a player that I trust to beat a Vikings team that has really struggled offensively throughout the last few weeks. It's J.J. McCarthy, I believe, for the Minnesota Vikings that's back and ready to roll. But I just don't trust what Minnesota can do offensively that will sustain anything against this Commanders team. I like what the Commanders have shown offensively the last couple weeks. So give me Washington to beat Minnesota on the road. Slight upset.
I think Washington showed me a little bit in the last game against the Denver Broncos that they can still compete. This has been a weird year because Kevin O'Connell has been kind of known for being a quarterback savant, and it just seems like he doesn't have any answers for the question that J.J. McCarthy is providing, and that's just a weird feeling in terms of Minnesota landscape. I think Washington wins this game. I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is going to go out there and ball out like some people may think, but I think that this is going to be easy Washington Commanders dub. Jaden Daniels may be back? I don't know.
Yeah. If Jaden Daniels comes back, I'm going with the Commanders. If not, I feel like they really don't have that good of a team to beat the Vikings. I mean, I feel like they both don't have a quarterback, but I feel like the Vikings have a better, just slightly better team, and they might win it without a quarterback. But if Jaden Daniels comes back, I'm going Commanders. If not, Vikings.
feels like a longer extended period of that end of that one Viking season where I think they were starting Kellen Mond at one point.
Yeah, right.
With Josh Dobbs, yeah, that was an interesting time and place. Next up, Miami and New York, the Dolphins and the Jets battling in the Meadowlands. Dolphins 3-point favorite on the road. Don't look now, but the Dolphins have come on strong here the last few games. 3 in a row, I believe, is what they're at right now in terms of their win streak. The Jets have won 3 of 5, so hey, two hot teams, the Jets and the Dolphins. Who would have thought? I just love turmoil, just causing turmoil for the Dolphin fans. They know they don't want to win this game, and yet somehow they're dragging them back into contention here. I give me the Dolphins here to win over the New York Jets on the road. I love Devon Achane. I just continue to if he plays a tough if he plays a subpar team, I'm going to pick him and his team to win.
Yeah, I think the Dolphins will win this one as well, bumping them into pseudo playoff hunt, which is an insane thought when we were thinking at the start of the year how we were, you know, the Dolphins were probably the worst team in the league. I think that the Dolphins have done one good thing over the last couple of weeks, and that is defend the pass. They've been really good against wide receivers, and I think that they get that done again in this game against the Jets, who have just A.D. Mitchell and John Mechie. So yeah, give me the Dolphins.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dolphins too. There's no way the Jets win in this game. I feel like the Jets just have – I mean, the Dolphins have the better team, the better coaching. Everything is just, you know, going for the Dolphins. Everything's better. But, the Jets have been playing good. I'm not saying they're not, but it's just that it's not enough to beat the Dolphins. So, Dolphins.
Yeah.
Next up, Saints at Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, a half game ahead of Carolina right now in the standings, and can get a full game up with four to go to get a win. I liked what the Saints were showing at the fight at the end of that game against Miami, and I think there's some respect there in terms of it. 8.5, I feel like, is a little too wide for this game. It's the divisional matchup between these two teams. Tampa Bay, rainy game in Florida, looks like it potentially. I think it could get a little ugly. I think it could get a little NFC Southy. I think Tampa Bay wins by a touchdown margin. I don't think they cover, though. Give me the Bucs to win over the Saints, though.
Yeah, Bucs getting Bucky Irving back. That is a massive addition to their team after missing him for a couple of weeks. And I think he's going to have a big game. Even though the Saints' rushing defense has been one of the few positives to come out of this season, I think that the Buccaneers will be able to run the football on them, especially in pouring rain. So, yeah, give me the Buccaneers at home and a must win.
Yeah, I thought the Saints were going to be the worst team in the league, but I guess not. but the Buccaneers are definitely the better team, and they're going to take this game, so I'm going Buccaneers.
Next up, Colts and Jaguars in Jacksonville. Same situation weather-wise, potentially. There's a little bit of rain forecasted on the west or east side of Florida on the north end of it. But Colts, checkered history anytime they go into Jacksonville. Kind of a house of horrors for them. And this is a team that's trying to get right now offensively. But Jacksonville, I think it was you, Tanvir, that mentioned top team against the run. And Jonathan Taylor's got to get rolling here, and this is going to be a tough game for them. I think this is going to be a tight one. Jaguars are a 1.5-point favorite. I like them to win by a field goal here in this game. And I think they take a good commanding lead over the AFC South with a win.
Yeah, I think the Colts need a get-right game, and I think they're going to exercise their demons in this one. And I think the Colts are going to win this. I think it'll be a close game. I just feel like Trevor Lawrence is not the guy that's going to push them over the hump in this specific game. I think if the Jaguars are to win, I think that they're going to need a heavy dose of running game, and they're going to need to stop Jonathan Taylor. But I think JT will eclipse 100 yards. I know that's not something that he has done over three of the last four games. So, yeah, give me the Colts.
You know what? I think that the Jaguars, if they play like they played the Niners of earlier this year, they could win this game easily. I don't know if they're going to do that, though. They've been struggling as of late, but I feel like they're at home. It's going to be, you know, a little bit different for the Colts, and I'm just going to go Jaguars. I feel it.
I'll tell you this. There's a whole different conversation with the Jaguars. If they didn't just collapse completely against Houston a few weeks back.
Right.
Whole different conversation. Next up, the last of the 10 a.m. game, Cincy at Buffalo. The Bengals suddenly reviving their season. Joe Burrow looks good as ever in one game against Baltimore. Can he revive it again in a must-win situation? Bengals got to run the table if they want to have hopes of making the playoffs. And I think Buffalo has a real tall task for them here, signing Darius Slay off the street to try to get any sort of help here. I think that's a sign of trouble for Buffalo's defense, who continues to, against the plus offenses, have struggles. And I think James Cook could have a nice game again, once again, a really great game against Pittsburgh last week against Cincy. This game's going to have a lot in terms of fascinating storylines. But I believe in Burrow. I believe in that offense. I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid and give me the Bengals to win on the road against Buffalo.
I think this has similar feeling to what happened last year with the Bengals, where, you know, they did not get off to that hot of a start, and then you get to the end of the season and they're just beating a bunch of playoff teams. I feel like they're going to do it again in this one. I think the Bills have been susceptible on the ground, and Chase Brown is starting to finally start clicking again, because Burrow gives the Bengals the ability to pass the ball down the field, and there's some duality in that offense. So, yeah, give me the Bengals. I think it's going to be a close game. I think they'll win by a field goal.
Yeah, the Bengals are good. The Bengals are good, but I think the Bills still have them. You know, I think Josh Allen's still Josh Allen, and he's going to have some magic, and I think they're going to win this one, so I'm going Bills.
Bengals, by the way, 5.5-point underdogs, and could be some snowy conditions up north. Four games to go. Denver at Vegas. Don't need to spend too much time. Vegas, horrible team this year. Only 7.5-point favorite, though. Is Denver.
Only
7.5-point favorite is Denver on the road, and I think that's indicative of something here, of what the public thinks about Denver, which is a team that loves to play with its food of late. And I can consider that defense elite, but let me tell you, when it comes to playing the teams they need to show up against, it's not there. Denver's going to win this game. It's going to be frustrating. It's going to be like any other game for them, and somehow, some way, they're going to win by 3. I think the Raiders will cover in some form or fashion in this game.
I think that would be true for any team except for the Las Vegas Raiders. I think that the Raiders are just not playing well enough to even compete in this game. I think that defense is going to haunt them for a while. So give me the Broncos. I think they win by 10.
I think the Raiders are going to win this one.
Whoa!
I really do.
This is a hot take.
This is a rivalry game, what they would call a derby game. Well, not a derby game, but a rivalry game. And quite frankly, I think it's gonna be a close game. I think the Raiders might have something going on here and might win this game.
Rams at Cardinals. Rams 8.5-point favorites on the road. Just quite simply, it's just get right game for the Rams in the division. The Cardinals play teams tough, though. I don't think this is a total walkover game for the Rams. Got to really be focused in this one in a divisional matchup. Could see this one being tight late for that kind of purpose. But I do believe in what the Rams do on offense. Little shaken up Devontae Adams right now. I guess he's limited in practice. But overall, I do believe the Rams have enough to beat the Cardinals in Arizona, so I'm going to go pick L.A.
Yeah, I'm going to pick L.A. too, but I think the Cardinals will cover. I think it's going to be a 7-point game. I think we might see the Rams get off to a little bit of a hot start because they want to get the stink of that Panthers loss off of them, but I think the Cardinals will stay in it. I think they might get a late score to kind of get the point differential down. So I'm going to take the Rams as well, but I think the Cardinals do cover.
If Rams start playing like they played last week, I don't know. Yeah. This Cardinals team can get hot if you let them, So I'm going to say, Rams, but in a close one.
Next up, Chicago, Green Bay, going to be wintry and snowy in Lambeau. Green Bay, 6.5-point favorites against the one seed of the NFC currently, the Chicago Bears. But I think there's a legit argument. You can see some things turning in the Green Bay favor. I think Caleb Williams, outside of all the things that this team has been able to do for the Bears, it has been hit or miss in terms of the offense. They've done enough to make the plays they've needed to. He hasn't made the crucial mistakes he's done in his rookie season. Green Bay's defense can cause a lot of havoc when it comes to the pass rush, including what Micah Parsons offers. But on the flip side, the Packers can get in their own fits when it comes to the way they go on offense. Bears turn you over a lot in terms of that. And so to me, it's a matter of if the Packers offense can stay out of its own way. I thought they had a really good game last week in Thanksgiving. I think they build on it on the extended break. I think Green Bay does take the control of the division in this game and win over the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Green Bay as well. Chicago, you know, they've been relying a lot on their running game. DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manunga have been doing very well for them, but the passing game is just still not there for them. And so while I do think that the Packers can be susceptible on the other side of the ball because the Bears defense is playing really well, Jordan Love can give a turnover or two up, I just think that Micah Parsons and that defensive line will stop the running game, and therefore the Bears are probably going to be in a like a Lions week one type of vibe where it's close, but I feel like the Packers will be in control. So give me the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I think the Bears Cinderella story ends here. yeah, it's gonna be the Packers here. I don't think.
Yeah, loser gets the 7 seed, winner gets the 1 seed. So, or well, if the Packers win and the Rams win, the Rams will get the 1 seed. But this is gonna be a big for playoffs.
Final game of our pick'em here. It is Texans and Chiefs in Kansas City. Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite, and I don't know if. What? This feels like stealing money if you bet on the Texans in terms of it. I don't know what matchup is more terrifying for the Chiefs than what the defensive line of Texans, the Houston Texans, can provide. It's going to be a potential mismatch with how bad Kansas City's offensive line has been able to handle the pass rush of late. And Mahomes has looked good the last couple of games. The offense has, at least in some parts, been able to move the football when it's needed to, especially in that Thanksgiving game against Dallas. But this Houston secondary is one that can get on these tough wide receivers, and it's going to be fascinating to see the chess match between Coach Reed and Coach D'Amico Ryan. I don't see how Houston loses this game outside of a epic meltdown from C.J. Stroud, potentially. That offense isn't going to let itself beat itself in this game. I think Houston buries the Chiefs in the playoff race, and finally we can say goodbye to Arrowhead and the playoffs.
Yeah, I've been picking the Chiefs on the constant that I just feel like there's going to be a week where they just wake up and they get back to Kansas City Chiefs ways, and I just feel like week after week I just don't see that. I thought it could be the Cowboys game, and they disappointed in the Cowboys game by losing that one. I thought, you know, some of the games prior to that it could have been. Even the Colts win I felt like was not as impressive as I thought it could be. So, yeah, give me the Houston Texans. I think the Texans defense is going to lock down this Chiefs offense. And I don't know if the Chiefs defense will be able to stop C.J. Stroud. It was an impressive performance against the Indianapolis Colts by him, and I think he'll have another impressive performance against Kansas City. So give me the Texans.
I'm going with Kansas City. I think that they still have that team. They still have the same coach, the same quarterback, the same offensive weapons. I mean, yeah, some things have changed, but honestly, they're still a very capable team, and I think that they're going to beat the Texans.
And that is your Benatti Blitz, brought to you by Grocery Outlet. Good picks, guys. We'll wrap up the show next. Stay with us on Behind the Bench on 1430 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Last little bit of our show left. Reminder that tomorrow we'll have Behind the Bench, and it will be from 3 to 3:45. We'll take it to Laker basketball after that from Boston. Central Valley Sports Report on Saturday with Paul Metters. And you may be hearing my voice on the show. I just got asked to be a guest, so
nice.
that'll be fun. I'll let Paul handle the promotion of that moving forward. It's 10 a.m. to noon live on Saturday for String Sports for y'all there. We got football over the weekend, and I believe we have the SEC championship on our airwaves on Saturday. So we'll have Georgia and Alabama on 14:30, right after Paul's show. So what a lead in.
I've been listening to a lot of college football content, and this playoff scenario, the scenarios going on, and that is wild.
We will break it down next week, whether I like it or not, in terms of that. Hey, NFL, we got game tonight, Detroit and Dallas. It's coming up in a couple of minutes. Keys to this game for sure. Detroit for me. Limping, hobbling on offense. It's the key to just see if Jared Goff can kind of get out of the rut he's been in, it feels like, a little bit. The slow starts, the inability to avoid the rushes. I've seen more batted balls from Jared Goff at the line than I've seen in quite some time, too. And with a hobbled Amon-Ra, I'm worried about the production and the ability. Feels like Jahmyr Gibbs needs to be the guy that goes for Detroit, but I wonder if that's not enough, because I think Dak Prescott has been playing at an MVP level this year. I've said it multiple times, and if Dallas has any hopes in catching the Eagles in the division, I think this starts with this as well. They took care of business with Kansas City. They take care of business tonight, in my opinion. I think Dallas goes into Detroit and wins this football game as they are a 3.5-point underdog. Tanvir, what do you got?
Yeah, I'll give you two players to watch in this game. I think for the Lions, it's got to be David Montgomery. They haven't been using him enough this year, and I feel like the ground-and-pound style of running game really works against the Dallas Cowboys. So I think David Montgomery needs to have a big game for the Lions. On the Cowboys side of things, Quinnen Williams. I think Quinnen Williams has been a really good pickup for them, and I think stopping Jahmyr Gibbs will be big. I think with Amon-Ra St. Brown back, I think he'll be fine today. I know we might think that he's going to be hobbled. I think he won't be 100%, but I think he'll still be able to make a difference. I'm going to take the Lions. I think it'll be a very close game, but I think Aiden Hutchinson makes a big deal of what he's going to do today.
Jorge, break the tie. Who wins tonight, Cowboys or Lions?
If the Lions are able to stop the Cowboys running game, they will win tonight. If not, then the Cowboys have a big chance of winning it.
Yeah. Fascinating situation if you're a fantasy player and you got a playoff spot on the line and you have Amon-Ra St. Brown and you have to start him tonight. Like, Tanvir, what's the nerves if you're the guy? You got to start him, right?
You kind of have to start him. I think this is the perfect matchup. I think what Amon-Ra St. Brown does, it really works against this Dallas defense. I think you've held on to this guy as a first or a second round pick for the whole year. You kind of have to start him in probably the last week of the regular season for most fantasy leagues.
All right. Thursday Night Football coming up next. We'll have our show tomorrow. Appreciate you guys. Great job, Tanvir. Great job, Jorge. Appreciate
it,
guys.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow, 3:00.